Okay, just a second. Okay.
Yes.
We'll start with the
South African Research.
South African Research Chair in Property Law.
Okay.
And then they will
And
be
then.
followed by the Department of Public Works. And then followed by the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development.
Is that all?
That's all. The Department of Justice and the Department of Minerals and Energy.
They are not coming.
They're not coming. They are requesting that they appear at a later stage.
Okay. Thank you very much, Advocate Bonani, Advocate Gwebu, Dr. Tuli, and the team. And once again, thank you for organizing our meeting so efficiently to enable the honorable members to do their work without hitches. Let me also just welcome all the members of the portfolio of the ad hoc committee, as well as the submitters that are here before us. And just to remind ourselves that the high panel report chaired by former President Khalema Motlanthe, some written submissions and oral submissions made during the public hearings raised serious questions about the pace of law reform process and competence of the government in implementing the process. Yesterday, we also heard that the Minister of Land Affairs conceded to the Public Works Committee that the department has no capacity to discharge its responsibilities. Some submitters claim that there is massive corruption in the law reform process. Yesterday, we heard from the National House of Traditional Leaders that they want the restricted lands to be given to them, and that they have a developmental master plan. They also claim that the establishment of community property associations, CPAs, alongside the traditional councils, created two centers of power, and they claim that many of these CPAs are corrupt and do not work in the best interest of the people. The Legal Resources Center pointed out that communal land is being alienated to mining houses, business for building shopping malls, which do not serve the interests of the communities. There is a school of thought which says that the expropriated land should be placed in the hands of the state, which is allegedly incompetent, corrupt, and has no capacity to drive the law reform process. As the ad hoc committee, we are required by the Constitution and the law to listen to all South Africans, both black and white. We are also obliged to listen to the affected departments in terms of the Odi Alteram rule, that is, listen to both sides before making a judgment. We are therefore pleased that you accepted our invitation to appear before this committee to address challenges faced by the departments and the remedial action measures that you are adopting to deal with the situation. And now, with regard to the Department of Justice and Mineral Resources, who are not here and require some time. I will leave that in the capable hands of the members of the SADC committee to decide how we should deal with that situation. I will make my views known when we come to that point. For now, let's allow the presenters to address us. We'll start with the research group, South African Research Group. Are they available? Who is going to address us? And please introduce yourself and your institution.
Good morning. I'm Professor Elmina Pisi, and good morning, all honorable members.
And raise your voice, please.
Okay. I'm just going to share my screen. Sorry, it's not perfect. I'm going to leave it like this so we can go on. Okay. We are a group of various academics. We specialize in property law and more specifically Section 25 of the Constitution. We made this submission under the guidance of the South African Research Chair in Property Law, currently awarded to Professor Zaza Bochenpool, who I'm very glad to see is also in the meeting. She could make time in a busy schedule. But we make our comments in our personal capacity, and it should not be attributed to any of our institutions. So I am Professor Elmina Pisi, and I'm deeply grateful for the invitation to present our views to you, the committee. Compensation for expropriation under the Constitution was the topic of my LLD, my doctorate dissertation, that I obtained in 2009, stemming from the last time, or the first talks, that we should move away from a willing buyer and a policy of acquiring land through market mechanisms. My thesis called for a change in the legal culture of expropriation to move away from the fixation of market value, the standard that is contained in the Expropriation Act of 75, to move towards a more constitutional requirement of just and equitable compensation. And then the thorny issue of how one calculates just and equitable compensation. It calls for interpretation that ensures justice and equity in every specific circumstance, which I argued will facilitate the project of transformative constitutionalism to bring about large-scale social change through non-violent political processes that is grounded in law. I'm still committed to that vision. That vision is also in line with the purposes of this chair in property law, namely to develop theoretical foundations to develop property law in the new constitutional dispensation through the production of comprehensive academic texts and a corps of highly skilled young scholars that can help the development of property law. It is also for that reason that we participate in this process. There's a saying that the wheels of justice grind slow, and that is true. It is optimistic to think that a document could fix 350 years plus of colonial and apartheid injustices in just 26 years. Still, we should not disregard the strides that we have made in law. Parliament, and that's you, promulgated progressive legislation in many instances, and there are promises currently that the legislative gaps that are there will be filled. Our courts have also developed and continue to develop rich jurisprudence on various property law issues, but that's the discussion behind this presentation. Nevertheless, the law and the judiciary is not perfect. It is evident in the slow development of a post-apartheid expropriation law. The development was slow for various reasons. For one, we have been waiting for quite a while for expropriation legislation in line with the Constitution. According to the Portfolio Committee on Public Works, the bill might be passed in July this year. This should be lauded, as this process has been coming from 2008. And the bill, as it currently stands, is actually making explicit what is implicit in the Constitution. Constitutions are deliberately written in vague language because they are written to last for longer periods than the legislation that clarifies it. They are the starting point for interpretation and require improvisation when confronted with a specific set of facts rather than a hard and mechanical interpretation of particular specific wording. In constitutions, there are no hard and fast rules. It's a framework. It lays down principles. The hard and fast rules are laid down in detailed legislation or refined in courts. Another reason for the slow pace in the changes in expropriation law specifically is that there has been very little jurisprudence on Section 25 in the land reform context specifically. We lack comprehensive judicial guidance on what just and equitable entails. This field fails, for instance, in comparison with a rich body of jurisprudence on the meaning of just and equitable in eviction law, which was developed over the years where clear principles have crystallized that guides us to understand what exactly is just and equitable. With all this in mind, we must make recommendations to help you fulfill the mandate to make explicit what is implicit in the Constitution. The Constitutional Review Committee's mandate was to ask whether South Africans think the Constitution should be amended by giving a simple yes or no answer. Yes or no questions removed the complexity from the conversation. It did not open a dialogue to diagnose land reform problems for us to make meaningful adjustments. In my observation and what the chair mentioned just now, that is why people are having that conversation now. But you had adequate inputs on the diagnosis of the failures of land reform, so let's get this back to the business of today. That Constitutional Review Committee found that the answer is yes, and the Constitution must be amended. Although we disagree, our submission will not dwell on the desirability or not to amend the aspect, for we accept the outcome of that democratic process. This committee's mandate then is to make explicit what is implicit based on the previous committee's recommendations. As such, this committee must clarify a legal position. The Constitutional Review Report, Committee report also indicated that there seems to be mainly two opinions of what is implicit. In that sense, this committee must first determine what is implicit before it can make that explicit. This will require an interpretive exercise of the constitutional text, knowing that language often allows for more than one equally valid reading of the Constitution. And this process of reading and interpreting is not only reserved for courts and lawyers, as we have witnessed through this whole process. The discussion where the meaning is contested is an important element of constitutional democracy. We have much needed conversations in the process, laying down our visions of what a future South Africa should look like. As part of an open community of interpreters of the Constitution, our submission is based on our legal expertise, clarifying what we regard as implicit, suggesting an amendment, and commenting on the draft amendment. Our underlying aim remains to develop a property law that can serve as a catalyst for social change that is grounded in non-violent processes and in the law. So, our suggestion. In our opinion, a reading of Section 25.3 that takes into account justice and equity based on an open list of factors listed in the section, but not restricted to those factors, allows that in some instances, expropriation of land is possible at little or zero rand compensation. It's a contextual question and will depend on each and every case. The duty to compensate remains, but the amount of compensation may be zero rand. The state will still have to justify why in that specific circumstance, zero rand is just and equitable. Based on this, we propose making explicit what is implicit can be done by adding wording, as you can see on the slide, either at the end of Section 25.2b or by adding a Section 25.3a that states explicitly that in some instances, when taking account all the factors, it may be possible for compensation to be nil. Should you, however, not be convinced by this, we comment on the wording you proposed. The current proposal reads, provided that in accordance with subsection 3A, a court may, where land and improvements thereto are expropriated for purposes of land reform, determine that the amount of compensation is null. This can be interpreted as conferring exclusive authority to determine null compensation to the courts. We had a fair amount of discussion in our group on this, but in the end, we agreed that this will require the state to halt the process of expropriation in every instance where it contemplates zero rand compensation, to let a court decide whether it is just and equitable. Alternatively, the state can easily dodge this by offering very minimal compensation that is not zero or null. We have also felt that it would be an administrator who will decide that this might be a zero rand instance, that and that person will then have to refer that to the courts for confirmation. The administrator in that sense then already made some form of a decision. That being said, the courts still have a very essential role to play in this process. It has strong review powers. It can decide and or approve, and has the ultimate authority in the case of disputes. But it should not be the initial decision maker in this respect. It is also important then to ensure that the expropriation bill has sufficient and affordable internal mechanisms to handle disputes about the payment of compensation. The provision of mediation is to be welcomed in this regard. The rumors of a more mediation-friendly approach of the proposed land court should also be welcomed and encouraged. Expropriation without compensation is coded language for many things in this country. The driftwood of our nation's collective soul is on display for all of to observe, each through their own lenses, as we have also seen yesterday in heated discussions. Everyone is clinging to the debris because we'll be damned if we sink. Like any agitation of the soul, it's not always pleasant or pretty. But the different meanings of the term, the conversations are muddled. We have witnessed that in so many conversations during the past 3 years. From a clinical legal perspective, that's our perspective, the debate is quite frustrating. The term expropriation without compensation is a legal oxymoron. Expropriation requires compensation, even if it is zero rand. But it does not take long to realize the debate is not about the technical legal aspects only. It's the fundamental law of conditions in a maze leading to the heart of the nation. And the problems we face in land reform will not be solved in our lifetime. Nevertheless, we, all of us, can plant the trees for future generations to sit under. We have to, because the land question will not go away and we cannot run from it. We leave you as a committee with the task to come up with sufficiently broad wording for the constitutional amendment in language that is characteristic to constitutions that will outlive us all and provide guidance for the type of South Africa that we, the people, envision. And then to ensure that Parliament pass or refine legislation that enables the change that the Constitution envisions, followed by the political will and the executive's commitment to implement these laws fairly and thoroughly in properly functioning institutions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for a short and sweet presentation. I am now going to take hands, but whilst I'm waiting for the hands, let me just try and get clarity on one thing. Are you suggesting that there should be an administrator appointed to decide on the amount of compensation subject to approval by the courts? And if so, doesn't that mean that now the courts are going to be more actively involved at the exclusion of the executive authority? And if that is what you are saying, are you aware that at the moment the ministry and the courts depends on the land claims commissions, which are accused of corruption, incompetency, and so on? If I understood you well, don't you think your proposal actually doesn't take us forward, but leaves us in the hands of a system that thus far has not worked? I put my question subject to correction. I may have misunderstood.
Yes, maybe I can clarify that when I use the administrator, I mean the executive. So in the normal expropriation process, it is I call it an administrator. It should probably be called either an official or part of the executive. They make the decision whether to expropriate or not, and they draw up the expropriation notice with all the detail, like the property and the compensation amount. And our argument is, even with zero rand compensation, the normal expropriation process should be followed, because the courts have always got a role to play in there, either as the final person deciding or the final person approving zero rand compensation, and that many of those things should be, you know, if you are offered zero rand compensation, there are mechanisms in the Expropriation Act and the current expropriation bill. There are quite a lot of mechanisms where people can dispute the amount of compensation during the administrative process. And only once that process is complete and the person is still not convinced that it is zero rand compensation, then do you draw the courts into the conversation. So I think with us, the question was, should the courts be the ones that determine that zero rand compensation from the beginning, or should we allow the administrative process to run its course, after which the courts come in to decide? I hear your comment about the corruption, the failed institutions, and that, of course, is a great concern to us as well. We thought we're not going to repeat that because it has been raised so many times over the past few days. But I don't think one can try and write a constitutional amendment or legislation assuming that the institutions will fail. I think we must write the legislation specifically to help these institutions to be accountable and to work, you know, to work in mechanisms to hold people accountable and to ensure, for instance, when zero rand compensation is paid, that they justify that there are reasons for that. And I think that is where our focus lies.
Thank you very much. You have sufficiently addressed my concerns. I see a hand by Honorable Kava. Whilst awaiting other hands, I will allow Honorable Kava to proceed.
Good morning, Prof, and good morning,
Colleague. Good morning to you.
Thank you very much. Professor Du Plessis, may I play a devil's advocate?
Yes.
I want to throw back at you what I picked up during the public hearings.
Yes.
In actual fact, it's one view that came up with what I'm going to throw at you. This person says that why can't you make expropriation without compensation a default position and shift the burden of proof to an affected person to justify that in her case, circumstances exist for compensation. Of course, that would be after taking into account all the five factors mentioned in section 25.3, A to E of the Constitution. What I'm interested to know what your comment would be in a situation like that. Thank you so much. I guess you had the question.
Yes, I did. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Honorable Kava. The Professor, Dr. Du Plessis, I'm going to take all the questions and then you will come at the end. These members of this committee agreed that for today, we answer questions only for clarity. We are not entering into a debate with the presenters, and we are not making any judgments. We will have our own time to look at the submissions on their merits and demerits, but today we'll just put questions for clarity. I see the hand of Honorable Dr. Ndlozi.
Thanks, Chair. It's really a quick one. Which part of South Africa's land was not colonially dispossessed? such that it should be made an exception from the principle of expropriation without compensation. Because that is what we are trying to resolve, is this historic injustice. So which part, what are these pieces of land that must be exempted from this principle? I hope that the question is clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Ndozi, for a short and sweet question. I see Honorable Shivambu.
No, thanks, Chair. I wanted to quickly check the view of this institution which is presenting here on what is their view on subsection 7 of section 25 that speaks to 1930 cut-off date. So that is my quick question in terms of what do they think we should do with that part of the constitution. But also I want to check maybe from you in terms of the criteria of selecting these presenters who are in now in terms of how did they come about.
Honorable Shibambo, are you done?
Honorable yes, Shibambo? Chair.
Okay. Yeah, I hope we have not swallowed your words such that the presenter did not hear you. Did you hear him clearly?
Yes, I did. Thanks.
Oh, wonderful. Any other hand? I don't see any other hand. I will allow you to proceed, but... if someone feels later after your response that they want to come in, I will allow them. Yeah, proceed.
Right, thank you. And thank you for the question. The first question is quite a tough question. Thank you for that challenge. So I think what one must remember is expropriation is a very invasive state power. So you give a lot of power to the state to come and take somebody's property. And while we do not have a positive right to property in South Africa, so nobody's got a right to own property, we have these constitutional safeguards against the state, either arbitrary taking away your property, not doing it in terms of a law of general application, or in the case of expropriation, not doing it for public purpose or in the public interest and the payment of compensation. So all these safeguards are there to protect citizens from a state that is quite mighty. And I think in that instance, in order to ensure that there's not state abuse, you will have to require the state, because it can take away your property and then become the owner of it, to have these safeguards there in order to protect citizens. And yeah, we're not always only thinking about white farmers or rich landowners. We are also thinking about communities. As my colleague at the LRC yesterday, Wilmien Wickham, alluded to, you know, that the biggest threat is probably to communities, and internationally studies show that people who are most vulnerable to expropriation by the state are the poor people, because the property is more affordable for their projects. So I think for that reason, to shift the onus to the landowners to determine the just and equitable compensation is unfair. I think it will not, yeah, I think it is unfair. I don't think it fits into the idea that citizens should have some form of protection against a very invasive state power. But that being said, it is possible in terms of the expropriation, the current Expropriation Act, and I think, if I remember correctly, the Expropriation Bill, that in some instances the owner has to come up with a determination of compensation. And I know that there's a lot of conversation about whether that is fair in the context of the Expropriation Bill. So you'll see a lot of the conversation lies in the mechanism that's in the Expropriation Bill. So if it's quick, I know often they say to the owners they're going to expropriate, the owner must come with an offer of expropriation. So that is possible, but I do not think it should be the default position, because I think as citizens we should be to some degree protected against this very invasive state power. And that includes all owners or all people who have rights in property, because it's not only property, it's not only land that can be expropriated, you can also expropriate rights in land. So I think that for me is where the fairness come in. Then Dr. Ndlozi asked about what part of South African land was not colonially dispossessed. I think we all can agree that colonial disposition was a great injustice and that it has happened all over South Africa. I know there's an amount of disputes often about whether the contracts, if I can call it that, that was made for acquiring land, whether that was fair. I'm not going to go into a historical lesson there, but I do want to put into the pot here that I think it's also shown in the presidential panel report on land reform and agriculture that about 60% of land was transferred after 1994 when we were this constitutional dispensation. And, you know, we can have conversations, and we often have these philosophical conversations about whether an unjust law is a law at all, and any action that happened under unjust law can be seen to be a valid action, and whether the transactions back then was valid or not. But I think once we look at the situation after 1994, with 60% of land being transferred after 1994, I will struggle to see how that will justify a zero rand, a blanket zero rand. There might be small instances. It's a contextual question. I think that's what I said in the first Constitutional Review Committee, that justice, questions of justice and equity, they are contextual questions, which is why this conversation is also difficult. Then the Honourable Shivambu asked about my view on Section 25.7 and the 1913 cut-off date. At the chair, I think there were one or two students, they did also their masters on there, the so-called, it's an Australian term, the 1913 cut-off date, if you can show that there was a continual relationship with the land, if I can put it that way. Again, my colleague of the LRC also spoke about the Richtersveld case of yesterday, so that 1913 cut-off dates can be surpassed in certain circumstances. I know from reading the history of the making of both the interim constitution and the final constitution that the 1913 cut-off date was a fairly pragmatic decision. It was because it is quite difficult to prove who owned the land before 1913 in some instances, not in all instances, and also because you will then have to start dealing with overlapping claims, and they were worried about what you do with overlapping claims when different people could prove the same rights, the same piece of land. So I think it's difficult. It brings in a lot of difficulties in proving and moving forward. So I think the 1913 cut-off date was a pragmatic decision. We can, of course, have conversations about this. I'm not sure if this is the forum to have the conversation about. But I also know that there's quite a big call to say, let's try and finish what's there in the restitution process in order to move on to a redistribution process that's not reliant on people having to prove whether they have land or not, because that process in itself is part of the problem why the restitution took so long, because the process of proving the claims and of validating the claims is quite a long and administratively burdened process.
Doctor, you know, I was a senior lecturer in law at UNISA for 10 years. What we used to do was to publish a magazine called Codiculus, where we were able to criticize the judgments of the courts and make suggestions. Now, the Concord has halted the processing of new claims, and that has opened the door for developers to develop the land that is subject to claims. And later, when the people come to claim, it is going to be difficult now to deal with the situation. Are you, as researchers, looking at these judgments and their implications? For instance, in answering Honorable Shibambo, you are saying interfering with Section 25.7, there would be a problem of overlapping claims or not knowing who owned the land. But have you people done research to establish whether or not that is true, so that you can empower us in dealing with this question? And before you answer, I want Honorable Shibambu to come back. I see his hand.
Yeah, Chair, I've asked a simple question. What is her view on whether we delete subsection 7 or not? Like, not some, whether it was pragmatic. I'm not asking for the history of that section. We know that it was a sell-out wrong section that was put in the constitution during the negotiation process. What is your view? Do we delete it or not? Like, you can answer that question without trying to waffle, because you spoke for a very long time, Leah, you didn't say anything.
Doctor, I wouldn't use the same words as Dr. Honorable Shibambu, that it was a sellout, but I know that there were what were called confidence building mechanisms to allow the process of negotiations to go in. Some pragmatic decisions were made, but now this process we're engaged in offers us an opportunity to review those provisions and make amendments. So can you address Honorable Shibambu and my questions for clarity?
Gladly, I will gladly do so. I must just do so with a proviso that our understanding of the mandate of this committee is made explicit what is implicit in the constitution as far as compensation is concerned. So the bulk of our conversation was focused on that. But I'm first going to answer you, Chair, if you don't mind. We regularly criticize the judgments of courts, yes, and we try and provide alternative views or theoretically sound ways of going forward. That is part of what we as legal academics do, of course. The Lomoso judgment, I just want also to clarify something, that it was a community that came to the court that said they had rights or they had claims that was not processed, and now they opened the claims again. And in that process, new claims came onto the land that these claimants claimed without mechanisms to say how they will first deal with the old claims before they process the new claims, or how they're going to handle conflicting claims. And the Constitutional Court there declared the legislation invalid and sent it back to Parliament to devise mechanisms to say how it will deal with these situations where there's already old claims on the land that's not been finalized, and now the new claims come under. So it was communities who had instituted claims that was concerned that they might lose their land because there's no clarity on how these claims will be processed. So in that sense, I thought that the judgment was correct, because it said there's no mechanism built into the Amendment Act to say how these claims will be dealt with, and it is now in the hands of Parliament to rectify that. To then answer the Honourable Shibambu again, the focus of our submission was on the draft 18th Amendment that was published, and our understanding was that it is limited to making explicit. So we as a group don't have a specific opinion on 1913. Me personally, I have not really thought about it, because it is not part of this brief. I understand the pragmatic reasons why it's in there. And I also understand the difficulty. One of the people that helped us with the submission is Cheryl Walker, who used to be a land claims commissioner in KwaZulu-Natal for the first 5 years. And she gave us great insight into the difficulty of the restitution process as it was. So I think one needs to have a more nuanced, comprehensive conversation about that, that is not within the realm of this presentation, or I think in the committees.
Thank you very much. That was very helpful. That was a good presentation. It has expanded our insights. We appreciate that. I don't see any new hands. Maybe in the light of the questions and your responses, you can just amplify that in writing and send to the committee secretary. I think that would be helpful. Now, can we move to the next Department of Public Works.
Good morning.
Thank you very much. Oh, Chairperson, let me just introduce you to the NTR space. I'm the Acting Director General of the Department. Perhaps I should just introduce, I know the advocate and I who will be making our presentation. The expropriation bill has been tabled in Parliament. And with respect to our input to this committee, Advocate Naidu and Advocate Warren Rattler will be making our presentation. I see you are ready to go. Advocate, you may take over. Thanks.
Thank you.
We didn't introduce us. Oh, Uday Naidu. Hello. Hello.
Good morning.
You say you are acting head of department, DG.
Yes, acting DG, NCR Stainsville, yes, Chairperson. I was introducing
okay,
Advocate Naidu, who is making our presentation. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Okay, proceed. Honorable Shibambo, did you say something before?
No, I wanted to understand, is the department presenting or they went to hire lawyers to give them legal advice, which is going to be given to us now, so that we know what we're dealing with?
I think that's a good question, because we expect the department to address us on the challenges that have been raised in public hearings and in the oral and written submissions. I think that question is very important. Can you address us?
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. If I go in that particular direction, I'd like to ask our DDG for policy, Ms. Devon Pillay, to come in and he can share those inputs, Chair. And just to explain, Advocate Naidu works for the department, is one of the lawyers that assisted us with the expropriation bill. So he's part of our team in that regard, Chair. But I'll ask Devon to come in to talk about the processes and the kind of inputs we've received from the public comments. Devon, over to you.
Thank you, Acting DG. Good morning, Chair, members of the committee and colleagues. Chair, essentially what we have done is Advocate Naidu is assisting us with the expropriation bill. So we have engaged to look at the Section 25 and the proposed draft amendment. I think in summary, there is concurrence and there's alignment. We've ensured that in terms of Section 12 of the expropriation bill, which gives effect to the nil compensation, is effectively aligned to the proposed intended amendment to Section 25. Advocate Naidu is presenting on our behalf. Is also has presenting jointly. We've concurred with Ministry in terms of the position because we wanted to ensure proper alignment between the two acts as well as the department and the executive authority. So all we've asked is for Advocate Naidu to present so that hopefully we'll be able to be more articulate from a legal perspective. So the positions, Chair, is the entire team from the department that's dealing with the matter is here and will be able to respond to any queries that may or any questions that may arise. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honorable Shibambo. I think let's accept that explanation. And
no,
then
Chair, just quickly, Chair, I think there's something that we must clarify. The acting director general says the person who's going to present here works for the department. But the submission that was given here says that he's an advocate. He signed this submission from the chamber. He's an assigned advocate, like when you go to lawyers to seek for legal advice. He's not working for the department, not in the payroll of the Department of Public Works. That must be clear that the department went to seek legal advice, and then maybe they were so impressed with that legal advice, they want to give it to us through that lawyer who has been giving them legal advice, which we can do ourselves independently. And you correctly said yesterday that if we were to speak to 100 different lawyers, there are possibilities that are going to get 100 different perspectives. So there must be clarity and distinction between what the department says and what the lawyers are saying. They've got different perspectives, all of them. So let's know that from what Public Works is presenting, we're going to be listening to one of the many lawyers' perspectives and opinions about this process.
That is fair comment. Honorable Dr. Ndlozi?
No, Chairperson. My proposal is that if these people are consultants, we must not allow the presentation to proceed. We can't be seen to be approving an indirect submission of lawyers masquerading as the department. The department must go do its work, which it's paid for. If these people are consultants, we don't want to hear them, and we must proceed to the next presentation. Thank you.
Honorable Ndlozi, with respect, I'll take a different view. You see, it may be that the department did not understand what they are supposed to bring to us. You can see that their Section 12 of the expropriation bill already incorporates the nil compensation, which means they have been doing the work that is supposed to be done by us, because as this ad hoc committee, we have to decide at some point whether we go for nil compensation or for expropriation without compensation, pure and simple. So I think let's give them the benefit of the doubt, because possibly they may not understood the mandate. Let's hear them. But when we meet on our own, then we will make our decision as to whether their input is relevant to us or not. Let me, before we reach finality on that matter, let's hear Honorable Mahlatsi, Honorable Trava, and then we'll come back to your suggestions, because we have to decide by consensus. Honorable Mahlatsi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. Chair, maybe we need to establish first whether the department takes total responsibility and ownership of the presentation that is going to be presented before us. I think that's where we need to establish, so that we do not get confusion in terms of whether this presentation is a presentation of consultants or the department. If the department takes total ownership of the presentation, we can therefore continue. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kala.
Yes. Yes, Honorable Chair, I agree entirely with Ms. Honorable Mahlatsi that all we need is for the department to give us that assurance that they associate themselves with the presentation that will be made by it's an advocate by Advocate Naidu. It's not the first time that this has happened. Was it 2 days ago? We had Advocate Pelleman, and who was making a presentation on behalf of one body. I'll remember the name of the body just now. And then minutes later, we had Advocate Delson, you know, who also was making a presentation on behalf of an entity that had actually appointed him to do the presentation on their behalf. So it's not the first time that we have lawyers appearing before us on behalf of their own clients. In that way, I would want us not to depart and make an exception simply because this is a department that is instructing a lawyer to do a presentation on its behalf. And it's upon us when we are in committee to decide what we make of the presentations that have made before us. Let's leave it at that, Chair. I agree with Ms. Mahlatsi And once we get that assurance, we can then allow Advocate Nadu to present on behalf of his client. Thank you so much.
Honorable members, I think Honorable Kawa is helping us by reminding us that there is a precedent where we allowed advocates to present on behalf of their clients. In this case, Advocate Naidu, the Department of Public Works could be defined as the client of Advocate Naidu. But he goes on to say that let's reserve our judgment on this matter, because when we meet on our own, we can decide whether, even if the department, Honorable Makhlatsi is suggesting, even if the department associate themselves with this, it could be association for convenience, but that should not concern us now, because when we meet on our own, we will look at the merits and demerits on this thing and decide whether or not the department has not failed in its duty in this case. But let's not put the cart before the horse, and let's proceed. Honorable Ngozi, I hope you'll agree with that process so that we can move forward. Honorable Ngozi? Honorable Ngozi? Okay, I think he's so he's persuaded, and then we can. Honorable Shwambo?
Now, I'm saying the context of that case that came with private organizations and NGOs, that is understandable. Yeah, we're talking about government. Like, it's government has to give us, it must have the memory of what it has been dealing with, particularly with this process. And I think, Chair, we may be either today or in a different context, need to deliberate on this concurrent process of the department, the Portfolio Committee on Public Works, running a process which is wholly dependent on the deliberations that we're having here. Because they are trying to push ahead with the legislative framework, which otherwise is supposed to be preceded by what we're busy with here. Because the expropriation bill must take into full consideration what we're going to decide as the committee and later on as parliament in terms of what happens. And so we have to talk about that. And I think we'll raise it as well in the Chiefs of Forum and in the parliamentary programming committee to say, why do we do these things concurrently? Because they're doing public hearings and submissions and a variety of other things which otherwise are replicating what we're busy with here and are fully dependent on what we're busy with here. Let's maybe talk about that on a different meeting or later today.
Honorable Shibambo, you are right. This matter was raised yesterday because the expropriation bill brought by Department of Public Works is an enabling legislation for the implementation of a constitutional provision. But we have not yet finalize the amendment of the constitution. Now, what informs their expropriation bill? I think that's a legitimate question, but to empower us to deal with this question, let's allow the department to present and bear in mind that we don't just want to listen to an legal opinion. We want to listen to their experience and the challenges, and they must tell us how are they addressing the challenges which have been raised in different forums. Thank you very much. Honorable Kawa, do you still want to come back? Is that an old hand?
Yeah, it's an old hand, Chairperson. My apologies.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Honorable Dr. Ngozi?
Yes, Chairperson. I'm not in any way trying to delay the process, but I doubt that the presentation that has been submitted to trial is regarding what you are saying, which are the challenges. What the presentation, it seems to me, is going to do is provide an opinion, just like we've been hearing from NGOs and churches and all of that, on the amendment, not the challenges of dealing with land reform, as you are saying. And if that is the case, and that explains why they've got the consultant. And I'm saying that with the greatest respect, Chairperson, it would be unwise of us to proceed if that is the presentation we are going to get from the department, which is its opinion on the wording and all of that. I think it would be very unfortunate that we accept. So maybe you could help us by asking them outrightly, because from what unless I'm not reading the right thing here, from what I saw, they are not talking about those things of challenges.
Honorable Dr. Ndosin, let's assume in their favor that they will address those challenges. Because if we agree with you that they will not, other members may have different views, and at the end, we will not be able to move forward. I think let's allow them to present and judge for ourselves whether they have carried out our expectations. Honorable Tandeka Babama.
Thank you very much, Chair. You've actually answered me. I wanted you to stop this democratic process. You know, democracy has also got a limit, and chair the meeting and make a decision. But you have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Tandem Babama. Honorable Murasata.
Chairperson, good morning.
Good morning.
I think the department, like any other previous presenters, they have got 15 minutes to tell us their story. And it can only be fair that we listen to them. And based on their submission, now we say you were irrelevant. And can you come back the other day if we still have got that day, or we interact with them? But for us to prejudge and rule them out even before they present, we will not be fair. Hence, I want to persuade my fellow members in the portfolio committee that let's listen to them. And if they are going to misrepresent the department, we will dismiss them after they present. Thank you.
Now, Honorable Murasetha, okay, I think you took the words out of my mouth that we should not prejudge. Let's allow them present and then the judgment before. Yes, Honorable Dr. Ndosin.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Yes.
No, the secretary of the committee, with the greatest respect, Chairperson, sends us presentations prior. You, honorable members, could not reasonably say we are prejudging. The presentation that is attached related to the department is going to give an opinion on the wording. I'm not prejudging. They have sent us a presentation. That's why we give them 15 minutes to summarize the presentation. That's the logic of what we've all been doing. So I'm not prejudging. I'm saying that they are not going to be engaged in the exercise that they... So that's all I'm saying. And on those grounds, let's release them. And I will be subjected to your ruling. That's okay. But we must not be misinterpreted and said that we are prejudging. Yes.
No, thank you, Honorable Ndosin. I think I'm also guilty of that determination that you are prejudging. But I think let's accept that there is a precedent, as Honorable Kawa indicated, and that if there is a precedent, the committee is required to be consistent in its approach in dealing with the matters. So let's say that you are not prejudging, but we have an opinion. But other members seem to have different opinions. And because we are not at one and we have a precedent, let's follow the precedent and maintain consistency by allowing the department to present. I think, as Honorable Mrasa correctly pointed out, we'll come back to this matter when we meet on our own whether their presentation was irrelevant and needs to be dismissed or not, or whether we want them to come back. But that is a prerogative of the committee, honorable committee members, to take. So let's move on, honorable members, and allow Advocate Gwebu, Advocate Bonani, who is next? Department of Public Works, Department of Public Works, please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'd ask the advocate, Naidu, and then go through the presentation. Advocate, if you could also use your time economically so the department can add further input on our experience 15, in the process.
15 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chair. Advocate, please proceed.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, members of the Academy, thank you very much for allowing me to speak. I'm quite flattered that my presence here has been so contested before this august body. At the outset, I should mention that I do intend to address the legal aspects covered in the opinion. There are a few additional matters that I, with the benefit of reflection, would also like to address. And I understand from Mr. Devin Pillay that the department will make a short presentation on the challenges that it has been facing after my own presentation. If I could, instead of discussing in a preambular fashion the constitutional law that is applicable, go straight to the proposed amendments to deal with eight critiques that I have sharing my screen, and thereafter to propose two potential solutions which may address the critiques that I have raised. May I share my screen? Mr. Chairperson, it appears that the host has disabled my ability to share the screen.
No, I just speak to the issues.
All right. If I may ask the committee to turn to the opinion at page 5, there is a replica of the text of section 25 as amended by the bill. There are eight matters that I would like to address. The first, which the department asked me to address, is that in subsection 2B, or rather in subsection 3 of section 25 in the amended form, the words as contemplated in subsection 2B have been inserted after the word compensation. Thank you very much. The as contemplated in subsection 2B is unnecessary surplusage. It does nothing to clarify the text of the Constitution, which is the purpose of the amendment as I understand it. The next critique is perhaps more fundamental. The purpose of this amendment, as Professor Duplessis indicated, is to clarify that which is already implicit. My concern with the proposed wording is that it would have the effect of necessarily implying that compensation in the amount of nil rand for expropriation of land other than for land reform purposes might not competently be nil. I will say that again. The necessary implication of the proviso could reasonably be that compensation for expropriation of land for land reform purposes only may be nil, but for other purposes may not be nil. And that is something that the committee needs to be very mindful of. The next point I would like to make, and I'm grateful to Professor Duplessis for sharing her screen, thank you, is that the anatomy of section 25 needs to be respected. Subsection 2 deals with the conditions for the exercise of the power to expropriate. It may be only for public purpose or in the public interest, and subject to compensation. The Constitutional Court in Hapagee found that the amount of compensation needn't be determined prior to a decision to expropriate, and that it is not a precondition for expropriation. But in general, it ought to be determined beforehand to be consistent with the interests of what is just and equitable. The suggestion by some that the language of Section 25 as it stands.
So you have time punch up by your cards already. So I'm going to put it down that way.
Some have suggested.
Are you still with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairperson. May I continue?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Some have suggested that Section 25 necessarily requires the payment of some positive amount of compensation for a valid expropriation. I do not think that is a correct interpretation of Section 25 of the Constitution as a whole. Section 25(3) deals specifically with the amount of compensation, and it provides that the salient criterion is that compensation must be just and equitable, and that the just and equitable fulcrum will be located where an equitable balance, and not necessarily an equal balance, between the public interest and the interest of those affected lies. Now, it may well be that what is equitable is for the amount of compensation to be nil. And that is precisely what the current wording of Section 25(3) allows. The addition of the proviso, I think, may have the unintended consequence of constraining the elastic language of subsection 3. The additional point I would like to make is that the proviso is, in any event, out of the natural sequence in which the elements of the property clause have been appear. Section 25(2) deals with the power to expropriate and the conditions for expropriation, where Section 25(3) deals specifically with the amount of compensation. So the point I would make is that to the extent that no compensation is to be mentioned expressly in Section 25, it ought to follow or be part of Section 25(3) and not 2. The third point I would make is that the style of the proviso does not fit with the remainder of the Constitution. The language is anachronistic and generally not in accordance with principles of plain language. There are other provisions of the Constitution in the transitional provisions which do use that style of proviso, but in general, it is eschewed in the remainder of the text. Fifthly, I would like to focus on the fact that the proviso in subsection 2b deals with quantification, which more appropriately belongs in subsection 3, and it leaves the question of quantification ultimately in the hands of the courts. That does not fit with the earlier part of subsection 2b, which enables members of the public or those who are expropriated to agree with the expropriating authority on an amount of compensation, provided that it is just and equitable. The effect of the proviso, therefore, is perhaps unwittingly to preclude agreement on an amount of compensation being nil in this case, as just and equitable compensation for land expropriated for land reform purposes. That perhaps might address Mr. Chairperson's concern that an amendment in these terms could overburden the courts. The point I would make is that any amendment to Section 2B should be mindful of and respectful of the fact that compensation may be finalized in two ways, either by a court or by consensus. The next point I would make is that the qualification to the word payment in subsection 3, that is the adjective any, is perhaps misplaced. The question isn't whether any payment is going to be made. The question is whether the amount of compensation is going to be nil. Any payment suggests that even if the amount of compensation is non-nil, payment would be optional. And in cases where just an equitable compensation must be positive, because it would strike the equitable balance, the qualification any payment seems to disrupt that carefully calibrated scheme of section 25. I would recommend that it be deleted. If I may ask Professor Duplessis to move down to subsection 3A, which is the new insertion. There are some comments I'd like to make on it. Professor, to subsection 3, capital A, if I may. Thank you. 3, capital A is one of the proposed amendments in the bill. It is not limited on its face to the expropriation of land, nor is it limited to the expropriation of land for land reform purposes. Instead, it concerns any property expropriated in the public interest or for a public purpose. And what it envisages is the creation of subsidiary legislation in order to give effect to that particular provision of the Constitution. It would follow that if such legislation is not enacted, it would not be possible to give effect to operationalize subsection 3A, so that compensation for an amount of nil would never be possible unless the subsidiary legislation exists. That, I do not think, was the intention behind the drafters of this bill, nor would it be consistent with the idea in subsection 3 that the amount of compensation being just and equitable is broad enough to cover the spectrum from nil compensation to any other positive sum. It also suggests, to the exclusion of subsection 2B, that it would not be competent for expropriatees to agree to an amount of nil compensation where nil compensation might be just and equitable. It would perforce require a court either to approve of that amount. Yes, Mr. Chairperson.
Would you not agree that actually your presentation usurps the role of this ad hoc committee by putting the cart before the horse? Because this ad hoc committee has not finalized the amendment. And how can you proceed to deal with the expropriation bill, which must be informed by this amendment, when the amendment has not been done? Don't you think that we should really move to the challenges faced by the department other than do this work, which is premature?
Mr. Chairperson, your point is noted. The instruction that I was given was to comment specifically on the bill and the proposals that it seeks to make. If it is perhaps early in the day to make recommendations or comments even on the proposed language of the bill, then it may be appropriate for my legal opinion to stand over for later day. That, of course, lies within the discretion as the committee.
I think it should stand over and let's listen to the department. What are they saying in respect of the challenges that we want to hear?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've noted that, Chair. I'd like to ask Devon to come in and give the department's input in this regard. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Chair, and your understanding. Devon.
Thanks, Ashley. Once again, Chairperson and members of the committee, I want to just please say that the intent behind the input that's being provided by Advocate Naidu was linked to ensuring that the there's a direct link, one, between the Section 25 amendment and the expropriation bill. But we wanted, and because the Section 25 amendment gives effect to the expropriation bill, we wanted to ensure that we don't have any challenges in terms of implementation. But I want to just focus on some of the issues, and it's not very long, just very quickly, is when we went out on a public comment on the expropriation bill, we received something like 50,000 inputs, and written inputs. Overwhelming majority was opposed to it, and there was a view that there should not be any amendment. There is no need for the legislation. And then as we've all indicated, and I think we concur that all we are doing is making what's implicit in the Constitution more explicit. So from a drafting of Section 12(3) of the Expropriation Bill, which gives effect to the nil compensation, the difficulties that we experienced was largely in terms of the comments we received and responding to those. But from a technical perspective, we were very comfortable with the draft that we have. We are comfortable that we will be able to give effect to it. I will be able to give effect to the intent of the amendment. So Chair, in terms of any challenges in terms of your drafting, I don't think from a principal perspective, this is fully supported and endorsed. There is no challenges that we foresee. It just may be the need to deal with technical interpretations and cleaning up, for example, excessive cross-referencing that may become a little bit more difficult to interpret and allow for greater interpretation, which we would welcome the opportunity to allow when given the opportunity to help tighten up the drafting, if I can call it the drafting style. But you see,
with respect, I'm not sure that you are helping us. This consensus that emerges, and I think even from legal interpretation, is that enabling legislation must be based on the Constitution. Now, if we are in the process of amending the Constitution and we have not reached finality, how do you then come up with an enabling legislation based on something that is uncertain? Can you address us?
Sure. Thank you. I think, who is this person who is speaking to us in a so undermining way like this, as if he owns us? Who are you? Because you're just talking to us like we're children here. You're telling us that we do not know what we're doing. What is your responsibility? Because we're engaged in a parliamentary process.
Honorable.
That has been mandated by Parliament. And you just come and talk to us as if we're children here. Who are you?
Honorable Shibambo, I didn't hear that. I think draw that to my attention so that I can deal with it and don't shout people. Honorable Shibambo, who is that person?
No, there's this Devon Pillay who is speaking here. Like, he says that we must not amend the Constitution. We must be subjected to what they are doing at the departmental level. Then the whole process which we have gone to community to consult on, listen to people, it has been on for like, it's almost 3 years now, if not more than 3 years. And then he comes to then treat this process as if we have not done our work, we have not done the political consultations and sought views from different people. And then he wants to subject this process to what the Department of Public Works is doing.
No,
I think they've got a wrong brief in terms of what they must come and
do. Let's lower the temperatures and just accept that the act that they seek to amend, it's a 1975 act
passed under apartheid. And it is unfortunate that their process now runs concurrently with our process, which is irregular, because our process must be concluded in order to inform their process. It can't be otherwise. Honorable Mahlatsi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm a bit disappointed by the Department of Public Works in relation to this particular presentation, Chair. Precisely because I'm not sure whether were they not briefed properly in terms of what they needed to present here, because they actually, the one, they've jumped the gun. The second presentation, which was supposed to speak about challenges in relation to their own public participation process, is not speaking to what has been indicated in the public participation process, but it speaks something else. So maybe we can get clarity in terms of what was the brief in relation to this particular meeting, because really it's quite disappointing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mahlatsi. I think your question is very valid. What was their brief? We need to go over that. Honorable Ndlozi?
I told Honorable... you, Chairperson. That is all I want to say.
No,
I told you, I tried to warn you, Honorable Chairperson, and I was very humble because you have structured the conversations in a way that we can predict based on the presentations that are prior given to us. There's nothing that was sent to us by Advocate Ramano which speaks to either the public participation process they're engaged in or the challenges, as you said. Nothing. What they sent to us prior that they are going to present today is a legal opinion which you have allowed for them to present and abuse us, Mr. Chairperson. I warned you. Thank you.
Honorable Ndlozi, let me say you are vindicated. But you are vindicated, but it would have been premature to agree with you before we hear for ourselves. Now we have heard for ourselves. It's quite clear, as Honorable Mahlatsi is saying, we need to find out what was their mandate, because their presentation really does not assist us. Honorable Mahlatsi, is your hand up?
Oh, it's my hand. This side.
Sorry, it's an old hand. I'll lower it down.
Thank you. Honorable Mrasata, help us out of this quagmire.
Prof. and Chairperson, I don't think we have done anything wrong. We don't just beat ourselves to that level. I'm going to propose that we have listened carefully to what Public Works have to present to us, and that we now can draw an inference and come to the conclusion that their presentation is parallel to what we expected out of this. And it is for this reason that as a committee, other committee, we summarily wish to dismiss them, that they have told us nothing. That is my
Mabambe.
No. I think, honorable members, we shouldn't be harsh. Let's accept, as Honorable Mahlatsi indicated, that maybe they didn't get the correct briefing. And without the correct briefing, they can't give us correct answers. So therefore, I think we should release them. And as the committee will decide as to how do we follow up on this matter, but we can't waste our time listening to something that is irrelevant. Honorable Shwambo?
No, Chair, we have just... aided wasteful expenditure, because the lawyer was supposed to want to charge the fees for having said nothing here in Parliament and something which is irrelevant, lousy legal advice and everything. So just aided wasteful expenditure of government resources. Let's release them and then we'll continue our meeting.
Okay. Honorable, is that an old hand?
I'm sorry, Chair, it's an old one.
Okay, Honorable Kawa, would you agree that, as you suggested,
We were consistent. We followed the precedent and allowed Public Works to address us. But their presentation is not taking us anywhere. And the feeling is that we should really release them.
Chair, I think we're correct on the procedural point, and but content or substance is another issue altogether. I think we're not commenting on the content. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Advocate Naidu. Advocate Naidu and the department, I think we want to assume in your favor that you didn't get the correct briefing, and therefore your submission is irrelevant to our process, and we will therefore release you, and the committee members will decide how we move forward, and so that doesn't require you. The committee will deal with it, and we thank you very much for your attendance.
Mr. Chairperson, thank you for the opportunity. On behalf of my client, might I refer the committee to the letter of 15 March 2021, which was the invitation to the minister, DeLille, to make comments on the bill. There was nothing further in that invitation to indicate that the department would be required to present facts on the challenges that it had faced. That is the only documentation that I have as part of my own instruction.
Well, thank you. As we say, we are assuming in your favor that there was something wrong with the briefing, but the committee will deal with that. So for now, we are pleased to release.
I did. Thank you.
Thank you. The Department of Land Affairs, are you here? The Department of Land Affairs.
Yes, good morning, Honorable Chair.
Are you Advocate Ramas? Are you Advocate or what?
Yes.
And are you working for the department?
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Can you introduce yourself fully so that we avoid the debate that we entered into in respect of Public Works?
My name is Tello Masala. I work for the department. I am one of the state advisors in the department, responsible for developing and drafting legislation.
Can you also tell us why your principals are not here, the minister or the deputy minister?
Yes, Honorable Chair, maybe that takes us to the issue of the invitation. It appears that we may be facing a similar fate as that of Public Works. Our understanding of the invitation was to comment on the amendment bill. And that's why the department sent me as the person responsible for legislation development, not the DG, who is in charge of the department's programs, who could speak better on the challenges and other matters related to the programs of the department. I am accompanied by the officials of the department, but largely to speak on the draft bill, not on the challenges or the programs of the department.
Yeah, but I'll be guided by the honorable members here, because if you read the high panel report, it is very critical of the processes of land reform in your department. The public hearings people accusing you of being incompetent. And someone yesterday said the minister conceded that you don't have the capacity. And now the one critical issue we're going to have to deal with is if we expropriate land, where does it go to? So a school of thought says it must go to the state. And if the state, as we talk now, is said to be incompetent, that doesn't have capacity, how will Parliament be able to sit down and say, let's give even more land to the state that is not capable of discharging its functions? That's why, you see, we expected your department to deal with the challenges you are facing and also with the remedies that were adopted to deal with this matter, and not to duplicate the work of the committee on the on the draft bill. But I'll leave that to the great minds amongst the committee members to guide us as to how do we move forward. I see Honorable Mrosso. Yes.
Chef.
Advocate.
Can I just come in maybe before members can address the committee?
Yes.
This meeting or these two departments, when you called them, it was in terms of Rule 275B, which provides that that this committee must give the relevant department in the National Executive Authority or Executive Organ of State in the National Sphere of Government sufficient opportunity to make submissions to the committee. So we had invited them to come and make submissions on the bill. So maybe that's why, you know, the presentation by the by Public Works and the Department of Agriculture addresses the contents of the bill and not the actual challenges that they are facing. That is the role that that I've just said with the point.
Okay, I think honorable members, Advocate Ramano has assisted us.
The chair is wagging the dog.
Who's speaking now? I'm saying Advocate Ramano has assisted us greatly because they invited the department in terms of Rule 275B to comment on the bill. But as I said in my opening remarks, lots of challenges have been raised. So our expectations were that they would address those challenges because those their responses would inform our process. Now, let me hear, honorable members, it is clear that the departments were given a brief that was not did not extend to the challenges. How do we deal with that situation? So there's nothing wrong that the administration has done. They followed the letter of the Rule 275B, and so they were perfectly right. Hello?
Sir, my hand is up.
Okay, Honorable Murasata and other Honorable Shibambu.
Yeah, Chairperson, I think in as much as we may come to the conclusion on this, let us also take the blame. The blame which says the two or the departments, because these were not only two departments invited, but we invited more than two. For example, Justice, Department of Justice also are supposed to be part and parcel of these oral presentations. Let's agree that the brief that was given to them was not adequate enough to come and assist this committee. I think that is the premise which I will present as a preface. And then having done that, and realizing that we are equally to blame, I will further propose that if it were possible, Chairperson, number one, we don't waste any further time with the Department of Agriculture and Rural Development, because they have made a confession that they are going to follow the route as followed by the Department of Public Works. I would humbly propose to this committee that we excuse in this case, because we are equally to blame. We don't dismiss. We excuse the presenter, and we remain talking as the committee, and so that we refine the brief of our expectation. And if it is possible, we invite them. We can create some space, I believe, even after normal hours, so that we listen to them based on the brief that we shall have refined in this meeting. This is my humble submission, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Rosetta. Honorable Shibambu.
No, thanks, Chair. I think that both the Department of Public Works and of Land Affairs and Rural Development are responsible for management and administration, and in some instances, a distribution of...
Raise your voice, please.
Yeah, I'm saying that the departments that are appearing before us are responsible for huge lands of the state, land and properties of the state, in terms of either giving them out as on leasehold basis or on as part of redistribution. They are involved in the purchasing and redistribution of land and all of those things. The only rational thing that we can then deal with in presentations that come from Public Works and from the Department of Rural Development and Land Affairs is to get a comprehensive update of what has been the processes of land management and property management broadly that is done by the department in terms of the properties that are legislatively under their control and everything else there. And so that we have a much more comprehensive perspective of what is happening, but also to give an opportunity to respond to the allegations of incompetency, of recklessness, of corruption that is associated with these departments in the management of state properties. So let's rather have a far much more comprehensive presentation from these departments. I do not think that it is appropriate at all for government, when Parliament is enacting legislation, like particularly when Parliament has already resolved that in principle, there must be proportion of land without compensation. What the committee is dealing with now is to effect that into the constitution. The agreement has already been reached. I don't think there's confusion about that. So if we have already reached that agreement, why should we listen to a government department to come and tell us that you have not thought properly, all of you as parliament, 81% of members of parliament, you have not thought properly. So we must tell you as government legal advisors that we have not thought about this properly. We deliberately allowed civil society and other role players to come and make submissions because that is how it has been before. What can the government legal advisors that hijack this process and want to delegitimize and overturn an already existing agreement in parliament, which has gone a very long route in terms of consolidating, included more than 100 public hearings in communities, when you add the ad hoc committee hearings and the constitutional review committee hearing, and included a lot of submissions that have been there. So we don't want to be taken back to zero by government as if we don't have a consensus. Let them update us on their areas of responsibility in terms of the properties that is under their supervision and management.
Thank you, Honorable Shibambu.
Thank you, Chair. I'm done here.
Thank you. Honorable Mbambama and Honorable Melda, and then I will make a ruling.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope you will. I am of the opinion that we are following process here, and we are following the National Assembly process. the department and others today were invited based on National Assembly rules. So I really do not understand what the argument is about. In fact, I feel that it was wrong to dismiss the Department of Public Works as, you know, as it was done. They were told to come here and do a presentation based on a rule that Advocate Vorani has just told us about. So what is this big argument about? We are following process. We just don't do things as a committee as we like. We follow the National Assembly processes and rules. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Mulder.
Yes, Honorable Chairperson, luckily things are not that simplistic as the Honorable Shivambu thinks. We do not have consensus. We may have a majority view, but we do not have consensus. The fact of the matter is that we have to stick to the rules of Parliament, and it's obvious that we need to consult with the departments that are directly involved in whatever process comes out of this committee's work before we can complete our work. So I would suggest that we give an exact instruction to those departments, what we want from them, what do we expect, that we schedule those opportunities for them and to listen to them, and then we can proceed. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Mulder. I think we should agree that the brief was correctly done by the administration in terms of the rule. But as honorable members of this committee, we could not ignore what came out of the written submissions, which blamed the department for mismanagement, for incompetency, for corruption, and all these things. And it would not be fair or right to conclude this process without hearing the department on those allegations. And therefore, Honorable Murasata, we cannot necessarily say we are to blame, but after listening to all the presentations, we can see that in fact the brief should have been wider in scope than Section 275, and this is our process. We are in charge, and I think as Honorable Shibambo says, the departments must be given an opportunity to give us a comprehensive report on these matters. And I think Dr. Mulder is also helping us a great deal to say that we have to consult with this department. So maybe we shouldn't even say that we have dismissed it. But we are saying that we don't want to waste the honorable members' time listening to something that actually is not going to assist us in this case, because the draft bill or the expropriation bill cannot precede the amendment of the Constitution. So that would be putting the cart before the horse. Maybe we should hear from Advocate Bonani. Can we find a place to bring back the two departments and give them a precise brief, and also check with the Department of Justice and Minerals and Energy that they cannot give us an open-ended request that they will come at some time. We have a program with dates, and people have got to appear before us in line with our program. Otherwise, we won't be able to finish our work. So I think we'll have to go back to them and say, we want their written presentations, and in the same way that other departments send officials. Any official or deputy, they have deputy ministers, they can come and make presentations. But I want to really agree with all of you that we need to redefine the brief and find space for these departments to come back, because consultation with them is quite essential. Advocate Bonani, can you tell us when can we fit them in again? Advocate Bonani, Advocate Gwebu.
Are the advocates still with us? Dr. Tuli?
Chairperson, can you hear me?
Hello? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Who are you?
It's Kwebuche.
Oh, yes.
We can accommodate the department next week. We'll find a slot either on Wednesday or Thursday.
Okay. Can you make sure that when you define the brief, I would want to be aware of that brief to ensure that it answers to what the honorable members need, so that we are not accused of being guilty of ourselves in this regard. Honorable Chibambo?
Thanks. I think we must also have to deal with this issue that keeps on rising.
Raise your voice.
We must deal with the issue that we have raised of the public, the full committee on public works continuing with a parallel process, which you correctly said that they are amending a 1975 bill, expropriation bill, and trying to align it with the constitution. And we are busy with the amendment of the constitution, and they are trying to align that legislation to the constitution, which we are amending. I think we might need to write to the speaker or to the parliament and the programming committee to say that perhaps let them allow us to finish this process, and then the legislation, which is under consultation now, will then be fitted into the amended constitution, so that there's clarity of the process without going on top of each other and confusing the two processes as if it's one process.
Luckily, Honorable Chibambo, the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Public Works is a member of the SADC committee. I think in terms of collegiality, before we write to other people, I will talk to her, and we find a way that these processes cannot run parallel, because ours must inform theirs. And so on. So let's leave it at that for now, and then I guess we can find a resolution of that matter. Honorable members, I think we don't have any other presenter, so I will work with the committee secretaries, Advocate Gwebu, Advocate Ramanu. We'll find a space to accommodate these departments. It's important that they appear before us so that we hear them, and then we can move forward. And that we will ensure that that does not interfere with our program. The program will still remain intact, and then we move forward. And honorable members, I really must thank you for very constructive contributions, and also your vigilance, Dr. Ndlozi, your the Sangoma of this committee, who warned us and we didn't listen, and then the Sangoma was vindicated. Thank you very much. Okay, the meeting is adjourned.